What's your agenda here?
Detroit is not a bankrupt city. We're being bankrupted. We're being bamboozled, flim-flam. We're being robbed.
The Agenda, setting you ahead.
Good morning. Welcome back to The Agenda here on Sirius XM Progress 127. My name is Joe Sudbay, guest hosting this morning for Ari. And this week, kind of a big thing happened in the world of for-profit colleges. ITT Tech permanently shut down its operations, its academic operations. Joining me right now to discuss this is David Halperin, who's an attorney and advocate. He writes at publicreport.org, wrote a really great piece about why this happened at Huffington Post. Welcome to the show, David.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
Oh, I'm glad you could join me. So this was pretty big news. Give us some background, because over the past couple of weeks, the Department of Education took some action. So talk about what the Department of Education did with ITT Tech and why.
Well, ITT Tech has been getting as much as $1.1 billion of your tax money, of our tax money, in federal student grants and loans. Close to 90% of its revenue, 80 to 90%, has been coming from federal tax money. But there's been lots of evidence that ITT Tech has been doing a bad job, charging too much, low-quality programs. And the Department of Education finally had enough. The department has been looking at schools that are a bad deal for students and often ruin students' lives. And the department said, in this case, your accreditor, the agency that's supposed to be vouching for your academic quality, has found all kinds of problems. Meanwhile, ITT is also being sued by federal and state law enforcement agencies, and it was just too much. They've been behaving irresponsibly towards students, towards taxpayers, towards the accreditors, and the department said on August 25th that no more federal aid shall go to ITT Tech to enroll new students. That was basically a death sentence because of their heavy dependence on federal money. And so ITT announced this week no more classes, no more academic operations.
Yeah, that, and one of the things, and I think you picked up on it, you could tell from just the way ITT Tech was presenting what happened. Like, they, this institution, which has done exactly what you have said, it's well documented, portrays itself as a victim here. And that's just enraging to me.
Yeah, it was a self-pitying statement that blamed only the government for what happened, as if they were permanently entitled to federal money and to enroll students, regardless of what they did. I mean, there are so many examples of what they did. They admitted a blind student to a computer networking program. The dean said, look, the student needs to be able to see the colors of the cables to connect them. And the school said, we're going to admit him anyway. The student dropped out in just a few weeks, but ITT got its money, and the student was on the hook to pay back the loan. Across the country, there are stories like that. I first got involved in this issue 6 years ago, and one of the most compelling things that got me to say I'm going to stay with it until we win was meeting a woman from Texas who worked in ITT's financial aid office. She was being told to falsify student information to maximize federal loans. She couldn't take it anymore. She told them it was wrong, and for that, she was fired. That's the kind of thing that, you know, ITT is just one example of many big and small for-profit colleges that are engaged in desperate search to sign up new students and to get federal money, regardless of the consequences for students or taxpayers. So this was the right thing to do, and ITT's self-pity is just one more example of how they were all about themselves and not about students.
One of the things I'm fascinated by, David, and there has, over the past few years, there has been more reporting on the for-profit college. I want to call it a racket because it feels that way to me. What was it that finally got the Department of Education in the year 2016 to crack down? What was it, just an accumulation of all the stories, and what's your sense of that?
I think it's a number of things. I mean, 6 years ago, this industry was so powerful. They were laughing at students on golf courses. Somebody once called me up to play me that these executives from Bridgepoint Education were laughing at students on a San Diego golf course. They were having the biggest names, you know, George Bush, Jeb Bush, speaking at their conferences. But the truth caught up with them. Senator Tom Harkin did an investigation, released a report in 2012 about all the ways that students and taxpayers were being scammed. The administration said we've got to have some new regulations. The industry, instead of saying, like the cigarette companies even did, let's make a deal to save our toxic product, they fought. They hired every lobbyist in Washington. They created a fight. That got our advocacy coalition determined to fight them, civil rights groups, veterans groups, students groups, consumer groups, and we got stronger. And members of Congress also became bolder. In addition to Senator Harkins, Elizabeth Warren, Dick Durbin, Keith Ellison, lots of progressive members are now standing up. And the members who were defending the schools may do it behind closed doors, like Marco Rubio pleaded with the department to go easy on Corinthian colleges before it failed. But now those members are more or less likely in public to defend these schools because politically it's become toxic. So more and more pressure, and I think the Department of Education, which traditionally had kowtowed to schools and their lobbyists, whether for-profit or nonprofit, finally said, enough is enough. We have to stop the bleeding here. And we argued to them, look, there are going to be problems in the transition for the current students, but that's not, these schools cannot be treated as too big to fail. That's not a rationale for continuing year after year to enroll more and more students in these programs. The problem is, even with ITT gone, there are many more schools, big and small, just as bad at ITT, that today will enroll new students in programs that will ruin their financial futures.
I first stumbled across this I have a young guy who works in my building, and mm-hmm. he is an immigrant, graduate, came here when he was 14, graduated from high school, and he told me one day he wants to go to college. So, of course, Joe Sudbury was like, okay, we're on this. And so we started talking about different opportunities. And I swear to God, every other day he would come in and say, oh, I got a call from this college that told me they can make me a medical professional in 8 months. I would make him Google the place so we could look at how many fraud cases have been brought against these institutions. But they were so aggressive. Fortunately, he ended up going to Montgomery College, which is an excellent school in the D.C. area. But it was just, it really turned me on to the aggressive, it was like a sales pitch. And you try to explain to someone, this is not going to benefit you. You're going to end up in a couple of years without the education you think you're going to get, but with a lot of debt. But you can see how they target students like that. It really enraged me.
These are sophisticated marketing machines. Yep. Often their biggest target is single moms in their 20s and 30s, and they tell them, your life amounts to nothing. You're a loser. You're a failure. You're hurting your family. You're hurting your children until you turn this around. Returning veterans, same kind of pitch. Immigrants, first in their family, going to college. This is what we call an information asymmetry. These folks don't have the experience with college or with contracts and with legal documents. The schools are absolutely designed to get them to sign on the bottom line. They refer to students as starts, pieces of business, and asses in classes. Even when ITT shut down, their website became this very passive-aggressive single line which said, we're not enrolling new students anymore. This was the website of their college. There were still 35,000 students enrolled at ITT Tech, and their college website simply said, we're not enrolling new students anymore. It's not a college, it's a call center. And they use these big call centers, they use bait-and-switch websites that say, here, get a job, but when you click on and put in your information, you're called 10, 12 times a day by someone trying to get you through a misleading, deceptive, coercive pitch to sell you these colleges, not to mention all the ads on TV and on the subway. It's all designed to take people who don't have experience with this and get them to sign up for a program that is a bad deal. As you say, a much better deal is available at Montgomery College or community college, but that school doesn't have the advertising and recruiting budget.
Right. And yeah, it's amazing how many, once you kind of clue into it, I'm like, I'm older. I'm done with school. But
right.
Once you start paying a little bit of attention, you realize how kind of ubiquitous the advertising is. It is everywhere. It's on TV all the time. I didn't watch that much TV, and you'd see those ads all the time for for-profit colleges. I'm not their target market, but you realize there's a lot of money behind this. There was a lot of people making a lot of money and a lot of people getting screwed.
And a lot of times what they do to validate is hire the fanciest people they can. In Washington, their lobbyists are Trent Lott, Bob Dole, Dick Gephardt, Lanny Davis, fancy people that have, you know, credibility with Congress. Don Graham, the publisher of the Washington Post, owned Kaplan for-profit college. He still does. He sold the Post. He went in and personally lobbied. He's considered a pillar of the Washington establishment. There he is saying how wonderful his school is. It's not. He also owned a chunk of Corinthian colleges. He didn't tell people that. If you look on TV this year, for Mother's Day, Ellen DeGeneres gave a mom a college scholarship and a big hug. Well, what was it a scholarship to? The University of Phoenix. It's not really a scholarship. It's a coupon. The University of Phoenix is getting $4 billion a year from taxpayers, and their graduation rate for their online division for first-time, full-time students is 4%. All the 96% of the students get, you know, pay the money and get no degree. Not that degree was worth much anyway. So they use famous, fancy people. Susie Orman taught a course online at the University of Phoenix. She tried to deny it, but she did. So they have the money to hire whatever validator they want. That signals to people that these are good schools when they're not.
Right. You've mentioned Corinthian a couple times. Tell everyone who doesn't wouldn't remember the story what happened with Corinthian College too.
Corinthian College fell last year, declared bankruptcy, shut down, sold a lot of its campuses to a debt collection company that really the Department of Education blessed the deal, but it was a bad deal. But Corinthian was like ITT, maybe even ITT on steroids for a period. All they cared about was signing up students. I got a call from a librarian in 2014 at one of their campuses, Everest College, in Southern California. And she said, we've enrolled a student in the criminal justice program who reads at a third grade level. He was a mentally disabled student. I was able to be on the phone with him and hear what he was like. And he said he wanted to be a police officer. He was never going to be a police officer. The people there knew it, but they wanted another student to sign up. It was just heartbreaking. She resigned, went public with the story, which I wrote about and then other people wrote about. These were the kind of things that Corinthian was doing desperately to sign up students. The Department of Education finally said, you've lied to us. We're going to impose a $30 million fine. Corinthian, you know, even though it was taking in as much as $1.7 billion a year of our tax money, as soon as that happened, said, oh, we're broke. We're declaring bankruptcy. Our assets are far outstripped by our liabilities. We owe money to all these people. They shut down. The students were out of luck. But the department at that time didn't have as good a plan. They sold these campuses, as I said, to the debt collection company, ECMC. They also told students, here are some campuses you can go to. One was Westwood College. Westwood College was another scam that itself shut down earlier this year. So that collapse was not handled as well. I really think, finally, the Department of Education, with leadership by Secretary John King and Undersecretary Ted Mitchell, are actually stepping up and trying to figure out, saying, one, these schools should not be treated as too big to fail, and two, we need a real plan that working with community colleges and governors and others actually gives students a chance to complete their education at a better school or have their loans forgiven so they can start over again.
My name is Joe Sudby. Talking to David Halperin here on The Agenda on SiriusXM Progress. We're talking about the closing of ITT Technical Institute, and David has done great reporting on this issue, as you can tell. One of the things I think people wonder about, and it came up after Corinthian, so these students have gone to these schools, taken out a lot of debt. A lot of students have a lot of debt. What happens now? ITT Tech shuts down. You are in debt, say $30,000 to ITT Tech, which no longer exists. What happens to your loans? Are you still those students still have to pay these loans?
Currently, that is the case. Now, students can try to transfer. Unfortunately, most ITT credits will not be accepted by other schools simply because other schools don't think that they're a good enough quality. They can transfer to a school, but it may be to another bad for-profit college, such as Ashford University. They can go to a community college. Community college may not accept their credits, may accept some, but even if they don't, it's so much more affordable that it doesn't really matter, because you can go get your entire degree at community college at the cost of one semester at ITT Tech. But they can apply for a closed school discharge. If you're a current student or you were recently in school in the past 4 months, you can say, my school closed, I want my loans back, I don't want to pay my loans. Then the taxpayers are on the hook, unfortunately, but that is you know, the consequence of the department allowing ITT, giving its good housekeeping seal, letting students go there in the first place. They can also use a provision that the Department of Education is finally taking seriously called defense to repayment, which says, including former students, I was defrauded by my school. My school was a systematic fraud. I don't want to pay my loans. Now, that's not going to get them off the hook for private loans, which ITT was in the business of pitching, higher interest loans that are not from the federal government but are from banks. It doesn't get them off the hook for the fact that they used up their GI Bill money, their Pell Grants, and their precious time. So it's not like students can snap their fingers and say, gee, I can get a free ride because my school was a fraud. It's a horrible tragedy for these students, as well as for many employees, great people who worked at ITT Tech who were trying to do the right thing. There were some, and they're all caught in the mess, and the mess is the fault of greedy executives at ITT Tech headquarters in Indiana.
Yeah. We know who's lost in this case. Who was profiting from? Who were those people who were in this college, and who were the people that made the money? That's what I'm intrigued by.
Oh, yeah. Well, the CEO is named Kevin Modaney. He's the guy who's guided this thing through its spectacular, predatory era. One board member who's been paid every year to be a board member since 1994 is named Vin Weber. He was a member of the House Republican leadership until he left, stepped down in 1994. He's a lobbyist. He's considered a wise man, was an advisor to Jeb Bush's campaign. He's the kind of fancy D.C. person who's profited off this industry that's entirely dependent on federal policy to pay it. Other people who've invested in the for-profit college industry include Mitt Romney, who talked up the industry without telling you that they were his donors and that he was invested in it when he ran for president in 2012. Tom Kaine, former governor of New Jersey, an investor in this industry. Fancy people on Wall Street. You have strip mall. The ones who've gone to prison typically are like the head of Fast Train College, which used strippers to recruit homeless men down in Miami to go to their school. That guy's in prison for fraud. But some of the fancy, Goldman Sachs, 41% ownership for a long period in EDMC, the second biggest company, also engaged in fraud, owner of the Art Institutes. Wells Fargo was the biggest owner of Corinthian colleges. So it's the fancy people. It's the Wall Street people. It's the private equity. You know, the University of Phoenix was just acquired by a private equity firm in New York called Apollo Global Management. They brought in as a partner a Chicago private equity firm called Vistria. Why did they bring them in? Someone admitted candidly, although they walked away from it, that firm is run by Marty Nesbitt. He is President Obama's best friend and the head of the Obama Foundation. These are, you know, what they do is they bring in, they rich people get rich by putting their reputations on the line for these schools. It's one of the worst scams and one of the worst outrages I've ever seen directed at taxpayers, but it also, again, hurts all these students who are caught up in it.
Absolutely. David Halperin, thank you so much for taking the time this morning to talk to us about this. It's an important story. The other thing I think that we've learned from this is the real importance of investigative reporting, because absent the kind of investigative reporting you and others have done, and you've done amazing work on this, this story wouldn't have been told, and members of Congress wouldn't have been paying attention. And I think it's a real tribute to investigative reporting and coming up, finding a story and exposing it. So I just want to thank you for that, because it's one of the investigative reporting can be an unsung hero in so many times, but this is just a great example of why it really matters.
There are a lot of great reporters on this story. I also work as a lawyer and advocate, so I'm sort of in this slightly hybrid role. But the real heroes are the people, the whistleblowers, like the librarian I mentioned, and others who have spoken up and had the courage to say, this is wrong and this has to change.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. You can follow David at D.A. Halperin on Twitter, and he writes often at Republic Report. You can find his writings also at Huffington. You write at Huffington too, right? You get cross-posted there. So anyways, thanks again for taking the time this morning, David. It was great
to talk to you.
Really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Okay.
Thank you too. Thanks. Bye. My name is Joe Sudbay here on SiriusXM Progress. I'm guest hosting The Agenda for Ari Ravenhoff this morning. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in 2 minutes.